One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Try Removing the Foot. And that is from Paul Adams on Twitter. Now, I can't remove my foot. I need it for walking on. A runner-up is Christopher Fonseca, who suggested the race was so good that everybody wanted 5 seconds more. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners, so let's be friends. Welcome to the Austrian Grand Prix race review. I think it was a great race. It was solid action over induced drama, and I think a round of applause is warranted for Race Control, who resisted the competition safety car when they had the opportunity to do one. We warned at the beginning of the season that safety cars and red flags would become like race director crack, but it looks like they've managed to detox themselves for one race at least. And well done to Ferrari, who despite themselves are somehow still in this title fight. So let's get the review. Coming up, we'll discuss, is Sainz's title push over, and what points have Ferrari squandered for Leclerc? What can Mercedes do from here? We'll take a bit of a dive into the new racing rules. And on a race weekend that delivered great racing, I'll ask, what have F1 done right and what have they done wrong? I'm actually going to argue that the new overtaking rules are actually a big step in the right direction, but that they enforced them incorrectly. Let's see if you agree with me. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're joined in the shed by Matt Trumpets.
Five wide, take that NASCAR.
Nice. Chris Stevens.
Hey, Spanners. What does F1 think it is having two cracking races like that on the bounce?
Unprecedented, especially for us 80s and 90s kids. And from Denmark, we have Christian Pedersen. Hey, Christian.
I do not accept corner two.
I just don't want to acknowledge
just
it exists.
Just putting it out there.
Yeah, you can call it corner two. I will never be moved. I feel like there's a Kickstarter campaign or a GoFundMe there, Christian, that you can lead.
In progress.
Yeah, let's do that. Right, well, let's start with where this race was won and lost. I think we go to you here, Matt. No big ticket event. I was tempted to start with the collisions, but I think we're going to go into those racing rules and play some whose fault is this later. I think it was an intriguing race from a strategy and a tactical point of view. I think firstly, we should say that I think Pirelli got it right for this race. I really do prefer this kind of toss up between two stop, three stop. To me is much better than one stop races, obviously. And it is just a smidge more interesting than one/two stop.
Well, if they got it right, they got it right accidentally, because the pre-race strategy call from them was a decided one stop with a single stop between lap 24 and 32, I think. But we can perhaps thank the infinitely variable Austrian weather for rinsing the track clean and dropping the temperatures, and then maybe a little bit having a sprint race. So only one practice session before the setups had to be dialed in for making it more interesting than usual.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a point there, Matt, in that the sprint weekend, it puts so much more pressure on the teams to really nail the setup from the word go, because they only have the 60-minute FP1 session before they're locked into Parc Fermé. So if you haven't quite got it right, and you know, we've seen throughout most of the season, the general consensus has been the Ferrari is quick in qualifying, the Red Bull has the race pace, and maybe is slightly better on its tyres. But this weekend, it was flipped. It was role reversal. And I'm wondering how much the sprint format played into that. And also, as you mentioned, the rain overnight and in the morning really washed the circuit. So they had a very green and less rubbered in, less grippy circuit.
I didn't know that there was rain overnight.
Yeah, the F2 race was it was on the precipice of wet versus slicks, and that's what made it so entertaining. If anyone caught the feature race in the morning,
just a tiny addition to Chris, I think the sprint format this weekend actually maybe was the first time the sprint format worked in collaboration with the race itself, and everyone was on the back foot. So maybe the sprint as an event should be looked at in a different way. Maybe it should be looked at as an intro to the race. I'm not trying to stir up things here. No. But if we totally reset our emotions and feelings and past sprint races and just look at this weekend, everything was
okay.
Maximum, I think.
I would argue that we might be suffering from some collective Stockholm syndrome. My opinion of the sprint race hasn't changed. It didn't add anything to me except taking away some of the mixed up grid. It was mildly entertaining to watch Hamilton try to get through a Haas DRS train. My feelings of that have not changed, and I don't want to dwell on the sprint race. So we'll take that was one each from one side. So me correctly saying it adds nothing still, and Christian saying that wrong thing that correctly got booed. But Matt, yeah, as Chris touched on there, different teams are definitely reacting to these tyres differently.
Yeah, and it was interesting because we had seen throughout the weekend, it really looked like Red Bull and Ferrari were, it actually looked like Red Bull were slightly faster on race pace, and they turn up on the day. And, you know, we'll forget about Perez for a second, but Verstappen was faster for exactly 12 laps, and then he was really not at all.
And Red Bull, I mean, let's not forget, this is Red Bull's home turf. And losing to the prancing horse on this particular weekend must sting a little bit. But, you know, Red Bull's always been very good here because of the altitude, which we didn't really sort of talk about at any point this weekend. But, you know, the Honda engine or the Red Bull powertrains technologies thing.
Honda, you had it right.
Has historically worked very well at high altitude venues such as this one, Mexico and Brazil, but Ferrari able to match that pace now, it seems.
I just want to add the comment from Leclerc after the sprint race, and he was very calm in his radio message. Yeah, we got this tomorrow.
Yeah.
And in from that perspective as well, we're not going to dwell about the sprint. I know, easy spanners, but from that perspective, we get a glimpse into what to expect for tomorrow. So maybe a plus for the sprint, but let's just quit it there.
Fine. I'm gonna resist.
Last wording it.
I'm gonna resist the urge. I'm gonna be the bigger man. I'm just gonna let you be. I'm gonna let you be wrong. Matt, continue.
Well, and this really ultimately was a story about tires.
Of course. Okay, you two, both of you, you're testing me now. But continue. All right, here we go.
I had to. It's in my contract. I have to do this now. I'm getting paid under the table by Pirelli. No, it was. We expected a one stop. We expected them to be close on race pace. But instead, Verstappen's tires absolutely evaporated. Mm. And by about the 12th lap, he actually, Red Bull, and I think correctly for them, realized that there was no way they would win a one stop race. And in fact, they weren't even sure they could finish a one stop race without blowing up tires. So they brought Verstappen in early. And to me, the key moment in the race is that not only did Leclerc stay out, but Sainz did too. And at that moment, you were like, man, unless something horrible happens, like an engine blows up, Ferrari's got this in the bag.
Do you think Pirelli were bluffing a bit by saying, oh, don't worry, it's going to be a one-stop race? Because they turned up at a track that has reasonable tire wear and they went for the softest compounds. I think they consciously went for, let's make sure this is not like a Sochi type one stop affair, at least let's avoid that. I think they went for it and they were rewarded. And I think they don't really have the risk anymore that if they go one step too soft, the tyres are just going to keep exploding or it's going to be a seven stop race. I think they're on top of the tyres enough that they can afford to take a little bit of a risk now.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the compounds they chose, yes, absolutely. They were doing their best to make it interesting and to give the teams margins where if they pushed too far, they would get punished for it. But I don't think they expected like a two or a three stop race, which is what we actually got.
Yeah, I think the three stop might actually just been more because we got that late VSC. And so for the leaders, they weren't going to lose anything and take an extra stop. So I think this otherwise would have been a two stop race. But Matt, that moment you were talking about where Ferrari did not react to Red Bull's early stop with Verstappen, absolutely crucial. And it showed absolute confidence in their plan and in their drivers to get the job done because they would have to pass Verstappen on track, which Leclerc had already done. So they knew they could do it with evenly aged tyres and on, you know, at that point, the same strategy. You know, so doing it with a tyre offset would have been even easier. And, you know, Leclerc ended up doing it three times in one race.
And while the tyres can be a little bit boring at times, I still think tyres this year is maybe as essential as anything. And the way it plays out when you see a Red Bull instantly turning on the tyres and you see a Mercedes having to go 1.5 lap or something like that to turn on the tyres, but then suddenly it comes alive during second part of their stint or whatever. This way of driving, everything just happens up and down during the entire race. Yeah. And I just love that.
No, it's really good. And it's, yes, of course, we tease Matt because not because tyres are boring, because he delivers it in a boring way. But the tyres are now an integral part of the game. And different teams have different approaches. So they must know when they do these setups how their car behaves with the tyres. So Red Bull will understand now that they're going to be good in quali. You know, they can switch the tyres on and get heat into the tyres. Mercedes are not qualifying to their pace and they're having to do double laps, if anything, to try and get the tyres up to temperature. And Mercedes are struggling off the start line. They seem to be consistently struggling off the start line as well. And then struggling out of the pits, but then you do see them come alive and you watch the lap times and you go, last couple of races they're up there with the top teams. So the tyre characteristics are absolutely fascinating this year. But let's stick with Ferrari, who delivered a race victory, but not of course, Chris, without a healthy dose of Ferrariness, just sprinkling in that Ferrari bitterness in case anyone was enjoying that. Let's just sprinkle some Ferrari on it.
Yeah, that was a real heart and mouth moment for Leclerc when he had this throttle issue sticking up to 30% in the low speed corner.
Was it as much as that?
As much as that. And I got to tell you, as soon as I went on board with him, and I thought, he's really got some understeer in that car now. And it would have been different at like every corner and every lap as well, depending on how he was driving.
I used to do karting. And I think on my third drive in my brand new kart, which was a two-gear DDR2, the throttle got stuck. And the thing about a throttle getting stuck, it sounds like, well, then you can just brake. But everything is still full-on power, and you have no control at all. And while you're always going on the limit, a throttle stock 30% must be almost impossible in especially slow speed corners. So what we saw today from Charles Leclerc was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, another just brilliant Charles Leclerc drive. I don't know why people keep doubting this guy's ability because he's just sensational.
Oh, yeah, me, I was, yeah. I just want to do a quick correction. Mia said Lewis had a pretty fast start in Silverstone. And I just want to clarify that what I meant was kind of like in the attacking and defending in the corners. Yes, it was a great start off the line. But Hamilton seems to have been losing places generally kind of lap one. Mostly to Magnussen and
except Silverstone
and Magnussen's carbon fiber. All right, but apart from Silverstone and any other good starts you can mention, they've been struggling off of the start line. But we're talking about Ferrari here. And look, I do want to be positive. But first, we do have to say that Ferrari do seem determined to try and lose these races when they have the opportunities. Because when Ocon was in fifth, I tweeted, jokingly, but quite confident, that Ocon had a really good chance of a podium if he kept that fifth place, because you've got to factor in the Ferrari-ness. And it's not really a joke, Chris.
Well, I would say Alpine had more self-sabotage going on this weekend than Ferrari did. What was that? Alonso leaving him on the grid like that.
Well, we'll get to that. But for but Ferrari, Matt, you can almost depend on something going wrong. And both cars had issues. That could easily have been a double DNF for Ferrari today.
Thankfully for us, Ferrari, looking at the rules, decided to bet on power over reliability. So every race is a lottery with Ferrari right now when it comes to the power unit and things going wrong. They were lucky that Leclerc was able to manage the throttle at the end. Although I would say, who amongst us doesn't go around turns with both the accelerator and brake pressed at the same time? I mean, am I the only one who drives this way?
Well, I mean, I've never driven a Formula One car, but, you know, I know from karting and from sim racing, I know people hate that. But there is like a moment in the corner where you're perhaps off both pedals and you're using the tyres maybe to lose that final bit of pace, or you're gently using the throttle to just bring yourself up to speed, or you're off the throttle just brushing the brakes to get the nose in. And if you're doing that, Chris, but you've got 30% throttle stuck, you have to completely adjust and fight your own acceleration.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, Matt, that might explain some of your incidents in the Mr. Apex iRacing F3 Cup, available on Mr. Apex Motorsport YouTube channel.
Yeah.
But it cost them today as well, because not only did they lose, you know, a podium with Carlos Sainz and those crucial Constructors' Championship points, but Sainz was about to take points away from Max Verstappen as well by passing him for second place. And so instead of taking, let's say, 10 points out of Verstappen's championship lead, he's only taken 5 points between losing to him in the sprint and Max getting the fastest lap. He took more points out of him at Silverstone. So, yeah, good weekend, sign of things to come. But overall, they're really only just chipping away at that lead at the moment.
Yeah, and they're lucky that Perez didn't finish in the points either, as it's kept the competition sort of closer on the constructors' side as well. And frankly, I hate to bring it up now because I was going to bring it up later, but if I'm a Ferrari fan, I'm very grateful that George Russell drove Sainz off track at the beginning of the race, so there was no chance he would get in front of Leclerc at the start.
That was an interesting one at the beginning of the race, and I think that's the first sort of incident we saw where we tested how they would treat off tracks, because Russell seemed to give Sainz a healthy shove off track. I didn't see who was ahead at the apex, but Sainz just kept it pinned and then managed to get past.
I mean, that's classic turn one in Austria. Yeah, yeah.
I'm wondering if the stewards looked at that and just went, well, he got shoved off, so fair enough.
Turn one, it's such a tight corner. It's an awful corner to start the race on, truth be told. Because it's there's really only one line through there. Going around the outside is really difficult. So I would say when you have the start situation like that, they just we'll let that one slide.
In regards to Ferrari, I just want to mention the traction out of corner three for all the Ferrari cars, especially the Haas cars. I think they were the fastest out of corner three, actually, Haas. And that was all down to the Ferrari engine. So it's not top speed. It's a traction thing for the Ferrari engine. So we have basically pretty short straights here in Austria, and where they were most dominant, where no one could catch him. We saw it Hamilton and Schumacher. It was almost impossible to go down into corner four. And that was the traction out of three, which is a little bit uphill. And you go into this strange corner. That says a lot about the Ferrari engine. And with Haas so close to the top, I'm a little bit afraid that the Ferrari engine is where everything's at, basically, for the Ferrari team. That's worrying, I think.
Oh, like a Williams Mercedes situation, 2014.
Sort of, yeah. Of course, they're still the fastest team right now. So why shouldn't we complain or anything? But I truly wish for a little bit more luck for this team, so we could basically see how the car is performing, so it's not always down to a fire or something.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Matt. There's Christian laying out how Ferrari are controlling their traction well. Is that even banned anymore? Are you allowed traction control now?
You've never been allowed traction control since they banned it in
94.
So it was allowed for a little bit, and then they banned it again in 08.
All right. Okay. There we go. Yeah. Okay. Oh, and Vettel used it in 2013, allegedly. But whatever.
No. Cut cylinders.
You cannot just say a thing like that and then just move on.
Okay. Good job I'm here.
What I want to say about Ferrari, though, is I want to look at the amount of points they've lost Leclerc at the moment. He's 38 points only behind Max Verstappen. So we can talk about the tactical mistakes and what they've cost him in wins. So maybe 7 points in Silverstone, a dozen or so points at Monaco. But I think the biggest one has to be the reliability. Now, it is a team sport, and there will be Derek in the pedals department whose job it is to make sure those pedals are operating. And it's not going to be just a random, you know, it's not an act of God. Someone has physically designed and made a pedal that it must have a smaller margin of failure, and today it got stuck or was prepared badly. These things are all part of the dynamics of Formula One, and the teams that get all the small things right won't lose out in the way that Leclerc nearly did today. What if he'd lost out today, Chris? Instead of 38 points behind, he would have been another 25 points behind on top of that, and it's game over. They were very, very close to all but signing off the title today.
Yeah, 100%. And I tell you, there are at least three races that Charles Leclerc should have won, and he didn't. And in two of them, he scored 0 points. Of course, the spectacular engine failures in Barcelona and Baku. And then, you know, you can throw Silverstone into the list and maybe Monaco as well.
And the big shame here, though, is that You were bigging up Charles Leclerc and saying, why doesn't he get his props? Verstappen has been getting his props this season from me, from everyone. He's been driving
literally
consistently. He's made very few errors apart from maybe the wind one in Barcelona. But equally, where has Leclerc put a foot wrong? You know, he should be leading the title.
Imola is the only thing that springs to mind. You know, when he spun chasing, I think it was Perez, if I remember rightly. But other than that, he has driven absolutely perfectly, not put a foot wrong.
Well, the interesting thing to me here is the demeanor that Leclerc has with his race engineer versus Sainz and his race engineer. If I was going to complain about Charles Leclerc, it would be simply that sometimes he accepts what the team tells him when he might need to advocate a bit more for himself. And I think Silverstone was a classic example of that.
Yeah, and he didn't look happy either after that, Chris.
And I'll tell you what, that's exactly what Sainz is doing. Because look at what happened at Silverstone. Sainz was saying, no, I'm not playing the team. You need to do this for me so that I can win the race. And I'll tell you what, if this Carlos Sainz, the Sainz we've seen at Silverstone and this weekend, if he had shown up at the beginning of the season, then he would probably be in the title fight.
I think the racing you saw from Magnussen and Schumacher this week says a lot about how you can control a team, how you can run a team, how you can do on track. I'm not sure it was down to a managed situation, but that was just what we got. And from a Ferrari perspective, what they should... I'm Christian. I'm 51 years old. I live in Denmark. I should not be telling Ferrari what to do, but still...
No, this is what podcasts are for.
Sit down, have a talk about the brand and the car and making Ferrari the champion. And then afterwards, we talk about the drivers. That's not what's happening right now.
You're the epitome of podcasting, Christian. Don't you worry.
Thank you very much,
when a middle-aged white man loves his opinion very much, he starts a podcast. And that's where podcasts come from.
Gets its wings.
That's why I'm here, guys.
Exactly. No. Look, this is it's a review show. You know, we don't make movies either, but we could have a movie review show. It's an F1 race review show. We don't want to be negative. I certainly don't want to be negative about Carlos Sainz because he raced very well. He's good enough to have won a race. He was good enough to take his luck in Silverstone, and it was a bit lucky at Silverstone. I could say, I suggested after Silverstone, has that done damage to his relationships at Ferrari, being that vocal, saying stop inventing things? And there was reports that Leclerc's side of the garage didn't turn up to the celebrations at Silverstone, although that has been much poo-pooed. And then his engine mysteriously blows up in the next race. No, that's not. I'll not start that conspiracy theory. But given that the engine did go, and what a spectacular way to go. If you're going to DNF, why not roll backwards in flames towards an active F1 racetrack. That's the way to DNF if you're going to. That looked spectacular and scary. And there was a moment where I thought he wasn't actually going to be able to get out. He got his elbows up onto the cockpit and onto the halo, and he looked like he was struggling, Chris. And then the marshals came, and that thing wouldn't stop. And I was like, oh, just move the steering wheel, steer back into the wall, come on.
Yeah, I'm slightly concerned why the car, for some reason, couldn't get it in the neutral and so that it wouldn't, you know, roll back by that.
Put it in gear, yeah.
Because Sainz was trying to get out of the car and it was rolling back, and those flames were getting closer and closer and closer to him. And that was quite tense to watch. Luckily they all sort of got there in time, and hopefully lessons learned, you know, from that about readying fire extinguishers, for example, because as far as I'm aware, they're not sort of primed and ready to go. They have to be sort of unpinned and all this.
I think the bigger issue was the car rolling backwards. And I think if anything got missed, it was if a car fetches up there, you need to get somebody there to keep it from rolling quickly.
Okay. And Rob in our patron chat, hello, patron chat, says, how dare you imply that Ferrari may suffer from internal politics? But look, that is the impression that we get. And that's like, you know, the general, it almost feels like received knowledge. You know, it's like, no knowledge. Of course, there's internal Ferrari politics. I think they need to start employing some Ferrari internal politics now, because I think Carlos Sainz's title fight is over, and he cost Charles points at Silverstone. They were messing around in the sprint race, and they were genuinely racing between themselves. This is it, Chris. Carlos Sainz isn't going to win the title. Ferrari actually, it's going to be a hard conversation with Carlos Sainz Jr., but they've got to have that conversation and say, it's just, like with Raikkonen in 2008, that's just the way the season's gone. We need your help.
Yeah, I would have argued this point should have come a couple of races sooner. But really, it hasn't been up until Silverstone where it became a problem, where Sainz was actually interfering with Leclerc. They did nothing about it then, and they didn't do anything about it after the sprint either. Leclerc could have challenged Verstappen for the win had he not been too busy fighting with his teammate in the earlier stages and allowing Max to build a gap. And luckily, Sainz got a little bit sort of balked up with Russell at the start of the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't able to challenge Leclerc, Leclerc could go with Verstappen on that occasion. But if that point hasn't already come where it's Carlos, please move aside for Charles, then it has now.
Okay. They might have a conversation with him, or they might do what they've probably allegedly done in the past, and you will start to see Sainz's pace just drop back a little, and he won't understand it. He won't know why he's not qualifying up there. He won't know perhaps why he doesn't have the race pace, and it'll become no-brainers because he'll be on different strategies. And don't fight Charles now. You're on different strategies, or he just simply won't have the pace to defend. I think Ferrari have got previous on that. I don't think Barrichello, I don't think Massa, I don't think Raikkonen, I don't think Vettel at the end had the same performance as their partners inherently in the car.
But they still need him there fighting with Verstappen, because he needs to be able to take points away from Verstappen. And if they do end up in a situation where Sainz ends up ahead of Charles, it needs to be a phone call to car 55, get out of the way.
Matt?
Well, let's be very clear about this. They did do that at Silverstone. They told Sainz to get out of the way. And you know what he did? He got out of the way.
Yeah, they also told him to give him some space at the start, and instead he sort of burned past him and went and won the race.
Because he knew that the only way that was going to finish was with Leclerc losing and him losing, because they were throwing away the tire advantage that they'd given to Sainz, but not Leclerc.
Well,
and he was also right about that, I will point out.
This is not the British Grand Prix race review. No. This is the Austrian Grand Prix race review. And well done to Ferrari for hanging on in there. But there is a very close alternate universe, Chris, where that was a double DNF. And we need to bear that in mind. And just my wish for Ferrari, because I would rather Ferrari won this year, is that, no, I'm neutral. What am I talking about? Is that they tighten up the little things and start drilling. And as much as the pit crews have got to be disciplined, maybe you need a bit of a whip in the engineering department as well. And just be like, guys, really, focus, Derek. Get down there. I wanna check those tolerances, test that pedal till failure, then give me another one, Christian.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad to think that that Ferrari hasn't won a race, or Leclerc hasn't won a race since March. That is crazy to me.
Okay.
But yeah, finally done it.
Just want to add that Magnussen drove almost the entire race with an engine failure.
I'm getting the feeling, Christian, that you want to talk about Haas. That's
I'm talking about the Ferrari engine. Right. So if we have one blow up and we have another Ferrari engine driving almost the entire race with a failure, that's
it's rough, isn't
that's
it?
That's not good.
It is rough. Let's talk about the
I had a comment about Haas. No, I'm kidding.
Let's talk about the home team. You had me there. You had me. It's like, will somebody rid me of this Dane? I was screaming out into the internet. Red Bull. Okay. Yeah, this was, it was a surprising one today because the Verstappen Red Bull machine has kind of been all powerful, all dominant. They disappear. He disappears. He breaks the DRS early on and you get the feeling like, oh, okay, well, he's gone. It's not a massive surprise because they're just on it this year. So there was two surprises, really, Matt. It was seeing Leclerc hunt him down, get into DRS range, and then overtake. And then just matter of fact, them going, yeah, tyres are gone. And they pit on lap 12. And then they pit on lap, whatever it was, 37. Like, they really did not have the measure of this track and tyres.
No. And we could say, well, you know, maybe they were better on this tyre or better on that tyre. But even well into the race, what we were hearing was Verstappen saying that his grip levels were changing lap by lap. And to me, weirdly, that suggests that perhaps, because I heard that it might have been slightly windy there. I just wonder if their balance wasn't quite there, and then add winds the wrong direction, or, you know, changing lap by lap, and suddenly your car that looked really fast on Friday is struggling to get to the end of the race on two pit stops.
Well, we heard Verstappen talking about the traction. There was a radio message saying, oh, this traction is a joke. Christian mentioned that seems to be a strength of the Ferrari-powered cars, the works team in particular. And I think when you mix that in with the green track that they were racing on because of the rain from the morning, then I think that just added up to Red Bull burning through the rear tyres a bit quicker than Ferrari were.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I think Verstappen probably did all he could do today. And it was interesting watching him kind of put up a little bit of a token defence, but I think sensible overall to not, like, push his luck. There was no signature Verstappen death lunge.
I will say, so the move that Leclerc put on the first time around, absolutely brilliant, wonderful. It was like Max didn't see him coming. It was chef's kiss, wonderful. Right. But then the third time it happened, you see Verstappen has that sort of change in mindset. He knows that this is the crunch time. This is where the final crossover in strategy is going to come. And this is the race that's going to be decided here and now. And you see that's when he starts moving over in the inside and getting elbows out a little bit, but not enough to keep Leclerc at bay. And you're right, still super calm, collected. He knows he can afford to lose a couple of points to Leclerc in the championship. So no point chucking it at the wall, risking a penalty, damaging the car, anything like that.
So the only real interesting thing I saw of Verstappen's race was them at one point telling him to preserve his tyres to kind of match Hamilton. It became clear that his race was, oh, make sure you're ahead of Hamilton, which was probably a little bit more comfortable than they thought in the end. And there was a little bit of the radio transmission missing, but I'm assuming the answer from Verstappen was like, no, I don't want to. That doesn't seem fun. I'm trying to think of when we've seen a Verstappen epic tyre saving race. You know, we've seen Perez and we've seen Hamilton, put, you know, even the likes of Magnussen on occasion as well, just go, right, okay, you need to do a super long stint to make this work. We barely ever see that from Verstappen, Matt. And I'm not saying it's because he can't, but maybe it's not his strength. So if there's ever a toss up in strategy, Red Bull are very often very aggressive on more pit stops. Could that be down to a Verstappen preference?
Oh, I think it's very much down to how he prefers to drive the car. The last time I can think of anything like that would have been like Barcelona, maybe last year when Hamilton had the extra pit stop and caught him at the end. Or maybe it was even 2020. I don't know. Years kind of blend together when you're my age. But in this case, I think the interesting thing to me about them telling him to save those tires is they were doing that for a reason. And I think that reason was Lewis Hamilton, because I think had Sainz PU not gone kaboom, I'm not convinced that Red Bull weren't going to pit him again, and that Hamilton might not have had an outside shot at having a crack at him.
Yeah, no, we forget that. And then, of course, the safety car kind of gives a no-brainer stop as well. So maybe we never got to see that play out. Because actually, Hamilton's pace, once he got settled into those stints, was pretty useful. And at one point, it looked like Verstappen might sort of fall back into his clutches.
Yeah, and I think that pit stop would have put him right on the edge of Hamilton's range for the end of the race. Would have been interesting to see, but as you say, the virtual safety car changed the dynamic of the race a bit for everybody.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Why does Verstappen drive differently around Leclerc than anyone else? He's not aggressive around Leclerc the same way. He gives more room. He's more like in a waiting kind of driving position, whereas what everyone else, he's the one making the initiative.
Yeah, with Schumacher, it was get out of the way or we crash.
Exactly. But with Leclerc, it's, I got to watch out for this guy, sort of mentality, Chris, coming out of the car.
He drives like that with him now. Let's not forget what happened 3 years ago into turn three, where he bumped wheels with Leclerc to take the lead off him. I do think it's a combination of these new racing rules that were established at the beginning of the year, sort of forgotten about a little bit at Silverstone,
and then we got reminded,
re-implemented of them. Yeah. This weekend. Incredibly frustrating, but we could do a whole show about that. Let's get Brad on at some point.
Let's actually
summer break soon.
Let's do that now, because we're going to talk about Perez and perhaps some of his recent scruffiness, and I think that will bring us on to the new racing rules and whose fault is it. But firstly, I'll just take a moment to say, if you are enjoying Missed Apex podcast, if you've got this far, maybe you'd want to consider being a patron. patreon.com/MissedApex. Support independent podcasting and maybe just add some value if you think we give you any. No problem. If not, the show is always free. But if you want to be a patron, we'll take away the ads on your podcast feed. You get a special podcast feed with no ads and you get the extra content with the doom scrolling, which has been going really nicely. And we've had patron call-ins and all sorts, and it's been really good fun. And what else? Oh, and we've got a patron Slack group as well, where you can chat to us, and me and Matt spend far too much time there. Or if you just want to pat us on the head and say, well done, kids, and buy us a pint, you can just drop us a tip at paypal.me/missedapex, a link in our show notes below. But apart from that, let's talk about racing rules. So for me, guys, we've seen a change of approach from Sergio Perez. He's got a kind of nothing to lose style of driving, super uncharacteristically aggressive at Silverstone. I think aggressive here as well. I don't think he's particularly doing himself much favours. He rolled the dice at Silverstone and it worked. He's rolled the dice here, in my opinion, and he's not been able to make that pay. Chris, I suppose we should play the bumper. Sorry, lots of bumpers in a row, but it's important, this one.
Whose fault is it?
Whose fault is it? Go on then, Chris. Whose fault was the collision between Perez and Russell?
So, according to the stewards, George understeered into the side of Sergio Perez. And I can see that viewpoint because it was almost identical to the Hamilton-Albon collision at that same corner a couple of years ago. But for me, there was a crucial difference this time. Christian's ready for it. But the crucial difference for me this time was that Perez had much more space on the left-hand side of the track as compared to, say, the Albon-Hamilton incident. Now, George had more space on the right as well. I think we need to kind of accept, especially after Sebastian Vettel tried it and failed, that the outside of Turn 4 just doesn't really work.
Christian.
I'm 100% sure about this. So, Corner 4 is... by definition, an understeery corner. So when you go in there on the perfect line, you will, by definition, understeer a little bit. That is just the nature of the exit of the
corner.
It's falling
away, isn't it? It's falling
exactly.
away.
Exactly. Yeah. So by judging this as a Russell mistake, the race direction has no insight into what actual driving is. And that is a major issue. If you have people making decisions based on what driving is, that has no insight into what is going on. I'm 51 years old. I'm a Dane. I do not work in Formula One, but I know this at least. And I've only driven a little bit of karting. That was so ridiculous. And they are basically ruining everything because what do you do now? This weekend we had Sebastian Vettel leaving the drivers' meeting in anger. Yes. And he got a reprimand for this.
Oh, Christian.
There's something going on here. And I think there's a big thing.
I'm a bit heartened by the fact that Vettel, he got a fine, didn't he, for storming out the driver's room, dissatisfaction about the stewarding, how it's applied.
Suspended, but a fine.
Suspended fine, sure. But on the last race review, you know, I was unhappy with the stewarding, and it's never nice to be like critical about people who are, I'm sure, acting in good faith, but we did identify some problems and inconsistency. So seeing, you know, a respected driver, and I think the general murmur from the drivers saying the same thing. At least I know I wasn't just shouting into the void. I take no pleasure from being negative in that way. Chris, then Matt.
Many of the drivers have expressed dissatisfaction with this inconsistency. There are quite a few drivers gone on the record. You see that on Autosport, motorsport.com. And then I think it was this weekend, George Russell, in his role as the head of the Grand Prix Drivers Association, sort of presented these arguments and these examples
on a PowerPoint
to the FIA as well. Very well-prepared PowerPoint.
Yeah. Matt?
Well, yeah, it's almost like they are... It's like they have the right idea. We saw battles go through that turn. I saw Norris go around Magnussen in turn 4, and they did not hit each other. But rather than giving one driver or the other the right on the way to the straight part of the track, to take the other one off, depending upon where their wheels are, it should just be simple. If they are alongside enough to be considered alongside, you each need to give the other maximum room. And you're going to be at fault for causing a collision. So it's pretty simple.
So I also think Perez was at fault, but that's going to lead naturally onto the conversation about these new rules that Chris was talking about, which is basically if you're alongside at the apex, they've now made a clarification, which I actually really agree with. When I heard about it for the first time on the previous show, it caught me a bit by surprise. But thinking about it now, I think it's a clear line in the sand of how the outside car is supposed to behave. So I just want to quickly go through what I think the rule says and importantly, what the rule does not say. So the rule is saying if you're overtaking on the outside, forget about the problems of deciding which car is overtaking or not. If you're overtaking on the outside and by the time you get to the apex, you are not ahead. So the front of your car is not ahead of the inside car's front as well. If you're not ahead by then, give up. Don't expect to necessarily be given room on the outside. If you are ahead, then the inside car must leave you a car's width on the edge of the track. So you being ahead at the apex, and there's a problem with what at the apex means as well. But basically, if you're ahead at the apex, you know you can hang it out there and you should be left room. And if you're not, the inside driver is going to get a penalty. If you are behind, then it's on you. You really should duck out and you can't complain if you get shoved off. I actually like that. That's clear. That's not exactly how I would interpret it, Matt, but that is clear.
And if it is clear, I mean, how much space did Perez have to his left? Russell left him plenty of room. If we're going to get specific about the application of that rule.
Yes. Okay. So that's the next point, which I want to make, which is what the rule does not say is that if you're ahead at the apex, you can just turn in whenever you want. What it does say, it says that you will have room at the exit if you're ahead. It doesn't say you can, because you're ahead at the apex, just drive into the middle of the track. You still have to do the normal thing, which is, you can't turn until a car inside you is no longer there. So if you still turn into a car that's there, the inside car doesn't have to turn. The inside car could go straight on, like Rosberg in 2015. The inside car can go straight on to the point where if he has to leave you, if the driver has to leave you a car's width, he can drive all the way to the edge and then just turn at the last minute enough to leave you space to come on the track. What Perez did was go, well, I'm ahead at the apex, therefore I can cut him tight. And if you look to the space on Perez's left, that's the space that he should have been occupying there, especially on an understeery corner. Russell did not have to see Perez turning in and go, ah, now I need to hug the apex. Now I need to be the one to back out. Christian.
I just want to mention that this was a racing incident in my book. I don't think either Russell or Perez was at fault. And no spanners.
Have you not understood these rules yet?
Yes. But I do want to add, let's say it's the final race of the season. It's the winner is going to take the championship. It's Leclerc, it's Verstappen. Corner one, Perez just jumps it on the outside, gets ahead, has no way of making the corner, but still gets ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It's a penalty for Leclerc he overtook.
No, it's only...
He can put Leclerc in that position. Sergio Perez put Russell in that position.
No, right. So in your situation that you're describing there, Leclerc would simply have to make the corner in such a manner that he would also be able to leave a space for Verstappen on the outside once you get to the exit. All that rule is saying is that if the car on the outside is ahead, you can't just jam it onto the edge in what I used to call the Verstappen-Hamilton maneuver.
I totally hear you, Spanners, but the corner four is a specific corner, and maybe it only goes for this one corner in the calendar, and so be it. But still, there was no way he could have driven outside Russell in that corner, and they are both making it. Russell couldn't do anything from his racing line. He wasn't understeery. I mean, it's just...
He wasn't overly understeery. He was the normal amount of understeery.
No, I won't accept it. He was not oversteery. You are, per definition, oversteering that corner.
Understeering, yeah.
Sorry.
So what I mean is he was not understeering more than you would naturally expect at that corner.
Exactly.
But Chris, if you look at like the Vettel's line into there, Vettel did get shoved off. But Vettel, he stayed wide. And then he didn't take space that had a car occupied. He went all the way to the outside like a good boy. And then he got shoved off. And that's why Gasly got the penalty.
Yes, exactly. There's a crucial difference between those two incidents. The Vettel one is much more similar to the Albon-Hamilton incident from a few years ago. A very famous example if you were watching Formula One at the time. And where, yes, it was more down to the inside car not leaving the correct amount of space because that car's got to sort of move forward at some point. And it can look like they're sort of coming across, but really they've just not got the space.
So we're all very guilty of doing the thing where we put our hands up next to each other to describe where the cars are. Completely useless on the podcast.
It helps me with the words.
But look, I like this. I think the who's at the ahead at the apex, I think it's at least a rule that can be applied consistently. I think today the thing that was missed was that doesn't mean the outside car can just dictate any line that they want. So I think they got this one wrong.
Yeah, there was also some comments in our chat room there saying they really like dropped the ball with track limits as well. I personally don't think they did. I love the fact that we're enforcing the track limits rule. It's just the circuit was a little bit ridiculous in that it was so easy to do it and the drivers can't see when they're doing it because the tires are too tall now or the visibility out the car's got worse.
Orange smoke. Yeah, Christian.
Yeah.
The issue is this is a televised sport and it is nothing without viewers, i.e. fans. If you have a lot of penalties and you have no way of showing why they're there, you have no communication about it, it just becomes a moot point. And this brings me back to what Formula One is. Formula One is a sport. It's about having some winners and everyone doing the same thing with the same set of rules. And currently, those rules can be very difficult to understand, and some of them are applied without us even knowing why and how come. And that is bad for sport.
Paddy in our chat says, do we all agree on where the apex is? And I think that brings me on to the last real point I want to re-emphasize on this is the inside defending car doesn't have to take the apex. I don't know who told you that. Who told you that inside car has to take the apex? They absolutely 100% don't. And I think that is one outstanding problem with this rule is if you're not anywhere near the apex, either of you, how do you determine at what point you've passed the apex? But I think, I really honestly think them making that rule is a positive step in the right direction. Mercedes. Qualifying was a bit odd, wasn't it? It was a bit odd and a bit like jarring to see Hamilton lose it into the wall. I think the last time I saw him make a real unforced error like that, you've probably got to go back years. The last time you saw him, maybe 2018 in Germany, and that was a brake failure. He doesn't very often just bin it in quali, Chris.
No, absolutely not. Very rare to see that kind of mistake from Lewis Hamilton, even rarer to see it happen to both Mercedes in the same session. Really bizarre. Mercedes are not back. Yeah, I know we kind of had this fanfare at Silverstone. The Mercedes are back. They're going to be challenging for wins before we know it. They're not quite back yet. It's going to be a little bit circuit dependent, I feel.
Yes.
And then, of course, because we had those two big incidents and they're almost kind of held together with duct tape, those cars at some point, George Russell had no straight line speed because the only rear wing they had left for his car was a very high angle, steep, very draggy rear wing. And I think about the circuits we're going to next. Le Castellet, very high speed circuit. Spa, Monza after the summer break. And if they don't sort out this drag issue, they're going to really struggle over the course of the next few races.
But you did it a bit simpler than that though, Christian. Like, isn't it that Silverstone was a track that suited them and they have made the step forward, but Austria never really gives them the best out of the car's advantages. It doesn't have a lot of, you know, high, medium to high speed corners.
Actually, I think Mercedes is slow, medium speed corners, maybe amongst the fastest of them all. But I want to add that Hamilton's off in qualifying at that exact time, the biggest gust of wind was measured in that exact corner during the entire qualifying. So maybe it's a car that is right on the tip of its balance, so the wind gusts threw both of them off. That would be my theory anyway.
Well, Spanish reference, the Verstappen and Sainz gust of wind in Barcelona that had a, sort of an equally dramatic effect on the car's handling. So it seems to be an across-the-board issue maybe.
Exactly, yeah. And also, I want to add that Mercedes came away from this weekend with 27 points. I know, Chris, you're saying they're not back, and I totally agree. They were like 25 seconds behind or something, the pack up front. But 27 points from a weekend where they both crashed in qualifying.
They this won. Is mad. They won, Chris. Chris, they Mercedes won today.
Yeah.
The most points.
They scored more points than either Ferrari or Red Bull, that's sure. No, it's mad, isn't it, how they still seem to be able to sort of scupper their way into these big points-paying positions. And that is Mercedes' true trick, and also the drivers as well. It must be said, Russell, I know he had the incident at the start of the race, but from then on, wonderful, masterful recovery. Hamilton struggled to get through the traffic in the sprint. In the race, as soon as it was in clear air, pace, pace, pace. And yeah, the only thing they're missing now is this raw speed to Ferrari and Red Bull, because finishing 40 seconds back behind from them, I know they both had traffic and things holding them back a little bit, but yeah, 40 seconds is unacceptable for Mercedes.
So let's face it, the only person who won this race more than Mercedes today was probably Alonso. I'm just going to say it now. But given that, I'm going to entirely disagree with you. I looked at the laps and the lap time, and I, without doing anything, making any allowances, Mercedes was half a second off the Ferrari of Leclerc over the course of the race. The next closest person would have been Ocon, who was about just under a second off for 71 laps. But I also did this. I went and looked at how much time Lewis lost in traffic before he got clear. And that was about 20 seconds. And then I looked at how much time he lost just in his pit stop, let's say. That was another 2 seconds.
And then behind.
And I redid that calculation, and it's about 3.5 tenths. So by my reckoning, at a track that is not great for them, Mercedes was only 3.5 tenths off the leaders in terms of raw pace. Now, I think that's a bit more than a step. And if should they get to a track that favors them, as we saw at Silverstone, they will be playing around for the lead. And we have still coming at Spa this whole technical update, Michigas, that we don't know how it's going to affect Ferrari or Red Bull. So
Operation Nerf Red Bull, command!
So barring the, you know, the summer break and the upgrades you get on the cars naturally after the summer break, and the technical delegate as well regarding the floors and the planks,
illegal
and
floors
things,
just say it, Chris.
At the moment, where is the next circuit that Mercedes could be considered quick? Because the circuit's coming up, they've got too many straights, or they're too slow. The next Silverstone-esque circuit, what, Suzuka? When's that? October?
Nah,
I think Ricard is going to favor them.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
More so than this one.
Yeah, more than this.
Maybe more than this one, yeah, but there's still on the back foot, I feel.
Okay, I was staring at the timing screens, and I think Hamilton, stint for stint, was genuinely competitive without the losses that he'd made with Carlos Sainz. So he was genuinely on Carlos Sainz's pace, you know, a little step back from Leclerc. We couldn't compare that pace to Verstappen because they were on different tyres and strategies very often. However, they lost out by obviously dropping it in qualifying, maybe a characteristic of their car, winds, whatever, floor too low, not being able to adjust to wind conditions. Then obviously playing pinball with Gasly and such like in the sprint race, lost that, getting stuck behind the Haases, that again, that ugly, just 4 seconds slightly off the pace pit stop that then put them into traffic behind Stroll and behind Ocon as well, which again, very costly. It means Mercedes don't have that tool in their arsenal. If you kind of forgive them all of that, it did look like a solid podium adjacent car today, Matt. So I'm with you, but those flaws that put them back in the pack and that made them lose time are real and do exist.
Yeah, they do. But I think what we can safely say is they're not going to lose any pace when the new technical rule, rules come into play. And I don't know. I think I know Brad was talking about new suspension parts. They may have been running softer suspension because they finally can. I think they're moving into a new area of performance, and the specific conditions at this track caught them out a little bit in qualifying. But that's something that Mercedes is very good at fixing. And you look at Haas, no upgrades, just setup work. Look at how much ground they have gained. I think there's a lot of positives for Mercedes coming out of this weekend.
Maybe so, but I'm still concerned for Lewis Hamilton's record of winning a Grand Prix in every season.
He's fine. He'll get one.
I know, right? We're halfway through the season now.
Yeah.
And the only time he's looked close was Silverstone. Now, maybe in a couple of races' time, we'll forget I ever said this.
So what you're saying is, Chris, the first time he had a competitive car, he looked like he could probably win it and he was in with a shot. That's what you've just said. So, look, there's another 45 races left. Christian.
The Hamilton fans out there, he started the season being, 300 kilometers off pace? And now he's been on the podium for the last 3 races.
Yeah,
so,
that's true. Very consistent.
He's just relentless. And I love the way he's driving. The same with Leclerc. Verstappen, we are seeing masterpieces out there, I think, from a lot of the great guys.
He may have been on the podium in the last 3 races, but it's because Perez has been out, or Sainz has been out, or Leclerc has been out of it. You know, it's come down to failings from Red Bull and Ferrari. You can't rely on that.
Which seems to be a trend, Chris.
Yes, I know. Yes, there does seem to be a trend.
I did kind of want to talk about this a little bit as well, because not crashing into people, not spinning off and not having failures is part of Formula One and is a skill in itself. Now, I was critical, and then I saw Brad tweet it as well. We've been critical of Lewis Hamilton being cautious and that he was perhaps a bit too cautious at Silverstone. And we said, you know, he's fighting like someone who has to, you know, be a bit hands off because he's fighting for a championship, not scrapping like a midfielder. But who is being gloves off in that Mercedes team and is being a bit on the limit is George Russell. And it's not It's not working for him. Hamilton is keeping his nose clean, and he might, yes, have lost out on one or two positions, but ultimately, he is delivering results by being a little bit, you know, he's a bit of an older head these days. I know, Chris, you can argue. Yes, he is. Russell is way more on the limit. No, Chris is going to.
Who is the one who's finished in the top five in every race he's fit and only not finished one race? George Russell.
Yeah, but he is, in the last few races, he is much more on the edge, pushing a lot harder, taking a lot more risks.
Yeah, the last couple of races, yeah, maybe. But
that's what I'm talking about, Chris.
Just to jump to Lewis Hamilton's defence a little bit about his driving in the sprint race.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because we know they're already short on parts. If he damaged the car again
and
because of the cost cap as well, they have to be so careful with these cars now.
So basically, I was saying that I feel like my criticism might have been slightly misplaced because he is delivering some results. But yeah. I think we kind of have to accept that Lewis Hamilton is an older driver and your mindset and mentality does change.
Stop it, Berners.
Go on, Christian. Go on, Christian.
37.
37 is old for an athlete, and it's old just in
Alonso
mindset.
Alonso is 41, and he's going to be renewed for 2 years, probably. So he's going to be 43.
Yeah, Alonso, yeah. Look, if you throw the exception that proves the rule in my face, then yeah. I'm not saying Lewis Hamilton is getting worse, necessarily. Although I do think, as an athlete, we've probably seen his peak. He's still a very good driver, but his mindset and his approach and his risk-reward balance has clearly changed, Matt.
Yeah, as an old person here, I'm going to say you may have seen like his raw physical peak, his absolute reaction time. Yeah. But we may not yet have seen the very, very best of Lewis Hamilton because he has experience that very few people on this grid have.
Yeah.
And he's shown that he's got the mind to apply those rules.
Exactly.
And
that's why I'm
saying
maybe Lewis Hamilton, 7-time world champion, is correct in taking that approach, and me, middle-aged dad in a shed, is wrong for criticizing that approach. I'm suggesting that might be a vague possibility, but look, France might be a bit of a better track for them. They are a long way off the top. If you look at Max Verstappen, 208, George Russell on 128, and Lewis Hamilton 99 points behind the lead. As much as people were saying, if they're not on top by Silverstone, it's over. I think they're out of the Drivers' Championship. Both of them. They're both out.
Agreed. And the Constructors.
And the Constructors. I haven't looked at the Constructors. How far are they behind on that? Oh, Christian.
Oh, Christian shaking his head. Going
I'm going to say the second half of the season is going to be Mercedes and Red Bull with Ferrari just messing things up behind. From doesn't a team perspective, well, but I don't think anyone can catch Max because if the Red Bull keeps driving like it does, I think Max Verstappen is going to win it.
That's not what we want to hear.
I know that's not the recipe, and it's not what I signed up for either before we started the show. I'm sorry, Spanners.
I know. I don't quite agree. I think Leclerc has a real shot. Leclerc is every bit the driver Verstappen is, without quite the experience of a championship fight. But what we've seen is we've seen Charles Leclerc evolve from that kid who's like slapping his own forehead going, stupid, stupid, why are you like this, Charles? And this is why everyone hates you and you're ugly. He now definitely knows that he's, you know, one of the prettiest at prom and that he can deliver a world title if things go his way. And that's if the car goes his way and if the team just openly go, we are supporting Charles Leclerc now. He is on 170 points, 38 points behind. Carlos Sainz is on 133, something points behind. And that means that it has to be all behind Leclerc.
It's funny you mentioned the title fight thing with regards to Charles Leclerc, because I can't remember what his GP3 championship was like, but the Formula 2, he absolutely dominated it. He had just no competition that year at all. So in terms of being in the scrap for the title, you're right. I do think he likes that a little bit.
And I'm not talking about Charles Leclerc's talent. I'm talking about Ferrari's.
Oh, yeah, that's a fair.
Lack of luck, maybe.
It's fine, but at some point, look, are they having a bad time, Ferrari, or, you know, is there inherent flaws in their engineering practices and their strategy department? I'm not answering that, but this season, it looks like they have inherent reliability problems, and it looks like the strategy department isn't sparking. Do they have it within themselves as a team to acknowledge that, look at themselves and say this isn't good enough? Or is it the kind of organisation where, you know, they just sack a couple of people to be the fall guys and carry on? genuine question. I genuinely don't know. If there's anyone from Ferrari listening or in and around Ferrari that wants to DM me and just give me an insight into the mindset of that team, if they can turn it around and get a grip of it, Charles Leclerc, I think it's not over. He can win. He can deliver that title. All right. Should we move on down the grid? Mick Schumacher, looking good. Looking all right for once, Chris.
I think Schumacher is finally showing his Schumacherness.
Really?
And not to the same extent as his old man, but there's some spark there now. There was no spark before. Now there is an essence of a Formula One driver being shown.
A breath of momentum.
Racing. Exactly.
Isn't it amazing how a couple of results and points and stuff can start to change people's attitudes and mindsets? Yeah. I still think that this might be a little bit of a spike. I think it might be premature, but it's definitely going the right direction. It's better than having two rubbish results in a row.
Yeah. Well, if he keeps going like this, absolutely. Yes, it's a sign of great things. So let's see if he can continue. I really hope he does, but I think it's a sign of things to come, hopefully. To be defending against a seven-time world champion like he did in the sprint, remarkable.
Well, let's just face it. Haas have had two double points finishes on the bounce. Magnussen has said that Schumacher's been on his pace for a while. What we've seen him deliver, though, this weekend that we've not seen before is the complete weekend. First time we've seen it. Can he keep it up at different types of tracks? That's now the question.
We're now going to hear from Dane and presumably Schumacher hater, Christian Pedersen. What do you think? Is he starting to get a grip of his older teammate?
Vi er røde. That's the Danish national football song.
Oh, right. Okay, carry on.
Yeah,
no, please.
And it's horrible. I'm not going to sing.
Okay.
I would mention that Magnussen was, after the race, he was big smiles. This is great for the team. Just up in the air. Of course, the engine failure probably did its thing there, but still up in the air.
Yeah.
And then you have Mick Schumacher, who's been far below what was expected for him for 1.5 years. Then he has two good weekends, and all of a sudden, Magnussen should just move out of the way. I don't think that's the right spirit somehow.
Chris.
And I think it's going to need some management eventually within Haas, that we already on the second race where Schumacher has some pace, has these Steiner-Schumacher differences and stuff like that. So I see a little bit of things coming. And I also think he was a bit too over-aggressive in the way he defended himself, moved way too much on the braking.
Who is that? Who?
Mick Schumacher.
Okay, yeah.
While I'm a big fan of Kevin, of course, and I root for my Danish heritage and the Haas team per definition by that default, this... I hope he can keep it up, but he should be a little bit more, yes, I'm going to do what the team wants, in my opinion.
With you, Chris.
Yeah, there's already that friction starting to emerge between those two, because in the sprint, Mick wanted Kevin to give him the DRS to help defend from Lewis, and Kevin didn't play ball. So let's see how that unravels across the season. Worth reminding people as well, Haas getting these two big scoring races in a row, despite zero upgrades on the car, just improving what they already had.
KP?
Oh, sorry, I was just agreeing.
I thought you had your hand up, you were waving in agreement and delight. And that
as always.
I want to move it on, Matt, but last one from you.
Oh, well, no, I was going to move it on myself, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. Aston Martin, is that where you were going? That's where I was going.
No, I was going to talk about the big constructors' battle.
Ooh,
in the midfield.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's better. Okay, I'll do my Aston Martin after this. These new regulations got written off by people after half a dozen street tracks, but we've had two races in a row where I think it's so positive. Those five cars coming up towards turn three, like two columns, all so close, you didn't know how it was going to shake out. This is what we've been dreaming about. Finally, a set of regulations that lets these cars race, I would say, as well as I've ever seen in Formula One. I can't remember any regulation set since the 80s that let cars do that, Matt.
No, it was remarkable to see not just the battle happening, but the battle happening without a single car getting hit or being sent off track. It was fantastic. Absolutely.
the quality of the racing, as in, you know, the driver's ability to race wheel to wheel together, has just improved massively as a result of this.
Yeah, and it's really down to how they've changed the outflow from the back of the car that's let them get closer. Plus, we got to give props to Pirelli here. I know you're going to laugh at me for saying tires again. Pirelli has continually upgraded their construction of the tires so that they can recover from getting too hot.
Yes,
and still let you race on. And it's now just the physical degradation that you're dealing with in longer stints.
I'm going to applaud everyone, especially Magnussen, double overtaking into corner one. So I just mentioned, just a small things, but okay, I'm sorry, I'll put it in there.
I mean, we're neutral.
Back in the days when Bernie Ecclestone ran Formula One, he launched sort of like a luxury TV service in the middle of the 90s, where you can watch all the cameras on boards and stuff like that. It was very high tech, and it crashed because no one could afford it, and they didn't really have the people for it. But since then, everyone's been like, oh, how can I watch all this? Now you can. Now you can basically just sit down and you can watch all the onboards.
Yeah, it's great.
The entire feed and everything. I did this today and it was just too much. I've never experienced a race like this.
Really?
You couldn't keep up with the cameras because something was just happening all the time. And that is totally new for a Formula One race.
No, I will say, in addition to that, I know that the TV direction comes under a lot of attack. But one massive positive is I don't think we've ever seen more of the midfield battles, and gone are the days when they would have lap after lap of just lingering on the front car. There was almost like something where if you were leading the race, you deserved to have your sponsors on TV. But that's not where the action was happening. And we used to get criticised. Why are you always focusing on the front guys in your race review? Yeah, because I'm watching it on telly, mate. I'm not there. We can only focus on what we saw on the telly, like you. Whereas now we're seeing all the battles on TV. And I think as much as the TV direction gets some criticism, there's some real good stuff about it.
It is really good.
And what a way to sort of symbolize this fight in the championship between Alpine and McLaren as well, in particular, because they both had kind of really mixed weekends in terms of that midfield battle, where Alpine really dropped the ball in Alonso's car. Thankfully, Ocon was there to pick up the pieces. McLaren with the older engine in Norris's car, because it failed in FP1, costing him some time. Ricciardo brake issues again. So, you know, loving that has its own narrative as well.
Fun fact, guess who's tied for fourth in the constructors right now?
No, is it Alpine and McLaren?
Yes, it is.
God damn. That should not be the case at all. Alpine should be miles and miles clear. They cannot string a weekend together to save their lives at the moment, because they clearly have a faster car than McLaren.
Yeah, well, I mean, how much do you think Otmar's heart was in his mouth when Ocon ground to a halt right after the end of the sprint race yesterday? I was like, there's no way he's going to finish all 71 laps today. Ooh. He could barely get through 23 yesterday.
And they didn't get him off the grid. What happened?
Oh,
Alonso's car.
Alonso was got stuck on the grid.
There was some issue with the car that they were fixing, and
energy system. The car wouldn't start when he came to a halt on the grid, and the battery was just drained and they couldn't restart it.
And what happened to Alonso at the end of the race today was he had a third pit stop, because once he got his new tires on, I think there was a failure in the rim of the tire somehow. Mm. So he had to immediately pit again. And with 9 laps to go, he was in P14, actually got a point. So that's 4 places in 9 laps, and that's pretty good.
It should have been like 6th, though, shouldn't it?
He really could have been on the back of Ocon and finishing 6th had that pit stop worked out for him.
And there's a running gag in the Mr. Apex WhatsApp chat now about Magic Alonso and how he gets used a little bit too much. But come on, he just is. At 41, he's still driving like a 22-year-old. Absolutely incredible. And I totally 100% see why they're going to re-sign him again for another couple of years, because there's just no let in the guy at the moment.
He overtook down to corner 4. On the grass with the DRS open and a hand waving saying no to Tsunoda driving. That guy's just...
There's no way he thinks that Tsunoda can see that finger wag. That is all for the TV. Alonso is so aware of the broadcast and that he is a character in basically Big Brother F1.
Anytime a driver waves the middle flag at another driver, there's no way the other guy can see it, but they're doing it, yeah. I think, for themselves.
It's for the telly.
As well, because they're like, otherwise I'm just going to do something I'll regret.
It's like when a goalkeeper, you know, makes that little easy palm to the side, but then does a roll and a somersault. Yeah, it's all for the cameras. Now, let's talk Aston Martin. Now, if I had Sebastian Vettel's phone number, I'd give him a ring. You know, we're peers, similar ages, both dads. I would invite him, like I say, come and meet me at the docks, Sebastian. We'd sit on the docks, we'd watch a few ships come in and out. I'd pass him a beer stein with one of those lids, beer steins, with a cold ale in it. And I'd say, have a glug of that. Yeah. And he'd be tired. He'd be depressed. He'd take a sip of it and he'd go, that was another long weekend. And I'd put my arm around him and I'd say, Seb, you don't have to do this anymore, mate. It's fine. You're rich. Your kids love you. You could buy 10 farms. You could use your wealth to save the planet. You could take over Aston Martin when Papa Stroll realises he's not getting value for money anymore. You don't need to do this. Just retire, mate. And as a turned around, newish Verstappen fan in the last few... Vettel fan in the last couple of years, I just want to tell him to quit, Chris. Just hang it up. It's... You're done. It's okay. No one's going to blame you. You don't have to put yourself through this.
The sport will be worse off without Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, I know.
I do fear we are watching the final days of his Formula One career. And that makes me really sad because he's such a popular figure because of all the work he does off the track. Yeah. But also just because he's such a likable character as well. You know, he's a funny guy and is, you know, the family guy as well. He's passionate, very relatable, and used to have these amazing moments on track that we're seeing. They're becoming, you know, fewer and far between, and unfortunately what's becoming more common are the driving errors and the incidents. And it's not how I want to remember Sebastian Vettel on the track either.
Did anyone read the interview with Otmar Schaff? I can't remember. I can't pronounce
Schaffnauer.
His last name.
Yep.
Schaffnauer.
Just say it with confidence. It's fine.
He did an interview recently where he talked about his days at Aston Martin, and he didn't really reveal much. But at some point, he just dropped a smacking line saying something about Mr. Stroll and micromanaging. And micromanaging, for those who don't understand, is when the boss on the top is telling everyone how to do their job. What Toto Wolff does is hiring a lot of people who knows what they do and then give them freedom to do their job. And micromanaging is basically how you did in the 80s and 90s, and it is not how you do business in the 2020s. And I think that's a serious issue for a team where his own son is driving one of the cars. Mm. Even though you have big car manufacturers willing to maybe take over this company with a Formula One team and a luxury brand, very high brand car. I mean, it doesn't look good from my point of view.
Chris.
I think what we're also seeing is the effect of, it takes a little bit more to just take the best sort of pound for pound team on the grid, which is what Force India Racing Point was. They did the best performances with the budget that they had, and the resources that they had, and you just chuck money at it. That's not how you build a championship winning team.
Okay. Does anyone want to give us hope? Because from, well, us, if you're like from an Aston Martin point of view, if you want to give them hope, it does look like a lost season. It looks like another lost season. It looks like a big step backwards. Your star driver, like Chris said, he's right. You know, it wasn't all bad luck this weekend. He made a lot of mistakes as well. I don't know how easy or hard that car is to drive. Stroll looked nowhere. They looked nowhere in Silverstone as well, Matt. Give me the silver lining.
All right. The silver lining is the car that they have fundamentally is compliant. If and when they understand it, it will be fast. Vettel has had some good races this season, this weekend, not particularly. He clearly had other stuff on his mind, what with the driver's meeting and so on and so forth. But even at that, he wasn't doing terribly in the race till he had that tangle with Gasly, which I'm not going to put on him. No. I'm going to put that 100% on Gasly. Up until then, he was doing fine. And I think he's...
Didn't he spin as well?
Well, Gasly, yeah, put him off in the gravel and spun him around.
No, I think he had another spin.
He spun in the sprint.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I think that was contact as well. Can't remember with who.
Yeah. But But I don't think Vettel's race is necessarily run, but I think he's going to need a more consistent car from Aston. They have good strategy. I like their head strategist a lot. In fact, she's impressed me in the past quite a bit. They have good people there. Some of whom, at least I've heard, don't hate working there. So
I
think this is more a question of Stroll, Papa Stroll, continuing to buy what he thinks is the best car, give it to the team, and then not realizing that it's going to take them a season at least to understand what they've just done.
So as a bit of a follow-up, like I said with Ferrari, we did ask a little while back, you know, like, does anyone want to give us an insight into what it's like at Aston Martin? And actually, we did get quite a bit of positive stuff, which was like, no, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's fine. You know, whether, you know, so they're not being like whipped, you know, at least. So people seem to be generally happy there. But don't worry, I'll never reveal my sources. I'll just act as if I had somehow inferred that information myself and use it to make me look smart. That's what we do, Matt, isn't it? We don't do the leaks anymore. We don't do the hot takes and the breaking news. No, because everyone just yells at you until it's proved true. And then no one remembers that you said it in the first.
You were the
place.
One who did it first, yeah.
Yeah, my last one was the Joe to be hired to replace Giovinazzi. That's the last one. That was me.
Yeah, because that was a good one though.
But that's how Giovinazzi found out that he was losing his drive. I just felt really mean, so I'm not doing it anymore. I'm out. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the podium. The Styrian Grand Prix in Austria. It was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think it's a classic Formula One style race. It was strategy over drama. It was good viewing. And for those of you who prefer the safety cars and the late red flags and the street circuits, I respect you. Just know that you're completely wrong. This is better. Silverstone was better. Austria is better. Paul Ricard probably won't be, but it should be. I don't know why Paul Ricard is not good. I can't put my finger on it. I think they need to just dig up some concrete, put some grass. What do they need to do, Chris?
Last year was awesome.
Was it? I can't remember last year.
Last year was amazing because you had the great Hamilton-Verstappen fight. And I think when you take these cars
over
there,
yeah.
I think it's going to be tasty.
I hope it will be a bit better. I just wish they'd find some way to make it so that I knew which way the track was going. When
a big turn one sign and
get ready for the eyesore.
Turn 17. Then
get on the camera, just have a camera graphic that says like turn approaching.
They have a graphic for turns. Spanners in the corner.
No, but you know what I mean? Like you're watching the cars come towards you on the straight
put the racing line on.
Yeah, and that's what you need, the racing line on. Because they suddenly disappear and you go, oh no, he's off. Oh no. Oh no. Ooh. No, that was part of the track. That's okay.
Spanners, I think what we've learned here is that your TV is too big because you can't see what's coming up.
I can't
see
all of it. That's right. In my vast mansion, my 1,000-inch TV screen, I have to
The PayPal subscriptions are going
exactly. I've got an iMac at home. I have to turn my head to see different parts of it. Okay. So looking forward to that. Like, we do have some hope for the French Grand Prix. As long as you're not going there and trying to park, you're probably gonna enjoy the race. But here's where we give out awards. We give out awards for a good thing and then a bad thing. So the good thing award is the thing of the weekend. It's the thing of the weekend. Fireworks and stuff. If you're watching the video, if you're not watching the video, if you watch it as a podcast, go and check out the video sometimes. Just see what our faces are like, see which of us is the most attractive. Spoiler, it's me. Christian's disgusting looking. Me and Chris, we're the best looking ones. Christian and
Matt. Open shirt,
just
baby.
A shirt. Yeah. And look at it.
Yeah, but I've got the accent. Thank you very much.
Christian doesn't do social media except for OnlyFans, but it's too expensive for the likes of you. Chris Stevens is on Twitter at ChrisOnRacing.
And Instagram and TikTok.
So just search for Chris Stevens.
Chris on Racing on all of them.
Oh, Chris on Racing on all of them. Matt is at MattPT55 or Matt2Rumpets. Search for those. And all good accounts to follow. Thank you to everyone who followed at MissedApexF1. Now have 10,000 followers on Twitter. So we're very, very happy with that. And you can follow me at SpannersReady as well. As I've already said, I'm not only the best one, but also the most attractive one. That's not controversial. What might be is your thing of the weekend, Chris Stevens.
God dang it. I was hoping you'd come to me last. No, my thing of the weekend is going to be Charles Leclerc's first overtake on Max Verstappen. It was just absolutely sublime. And you see Max kind of realizing a little bit late, oh, he's coming down the inside. I better do something about it. Oh, I can't do any more than this. And classic, beautiful racing.
Yeah, my thing of the weekend is going to be Magnussen's double overtake. No, I'm only joking. Christian, what's your thing of the weekend?
It's actually not that.
Oh, okay, cool.
you got me so hyped up there. It's, my thing of the week is just the entire racing generally, because I had a blast all through the race. It was very good entertainment. It's well produced.
I thought so, yeah.
It's a very good package we have right now, I think. So that's my thing of the week, Formula One as a broadcast and sport.
Yeah, I think, look, we are fans of F1 and we're fans of watching it on TV. I think we're critical of the points of the broadcast that we don't like. Like, thanks for never having that drone shot again, because that made me feel pretty ill until the tech comes on a bit, maybe. But the fact is, they've innovated and they've always looked to push. And little things like, we would never have known how badly the stuck throttle was affecting Leclerc years ago. Now it's quite alarming. You see him going into corner and the throttle is stuck. And you're like, oh my goodness. Like, they've really worked hard to give us the information we need. And I think most complaints at this point is, you know, niggles and, you know, and us. Yeah,
we'll try just watching a race from the start, 20s. Oh, I mean, it's yeah, miles away.
Even now, if I can't watch the race live, or if I'm out and I'm trying to watch it on my mobile without all the extra information that I'm used to, like the radio calls and even the live timing, it's such a completely different experience. So I think we are very lucky with the information we have. We get to understand the sport and how it unfolds. Matt Trumpets, what's your thing of the weekend?
Oh, you know exactly where I'm going to go with this. And sorry to be boring, but there was a moment in the race where my man Esteban was on brand new tires.
Yeah, I see.
And unlapped himself on the race leader. And he was actually the last person to finish on the lead lap. So just for that tiny bit of fun at the Red Bull Ring, and also for the fact that there was no shoving match after the race.
Shout out to Leclerc for not hitting him.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Is that everyone's thing of the weekend? Just mine? Is it just mine
yours
to go? Okay. Oh, what can I give?
No, that was
the
overtake in corner one.
No, I'll give that to him as well.
Yes.
I'm going to give it to Lewis Hamilton for proving me wrong with his more cautious approach. He is surviving long enough to pick up these results, and the whole team has worked brilliantly. And also, just picking himself up in a positive way after dropping it in the sprint race. Normally with Lewis, you know, we get a bit of a head down, but we've not had to see him in this mode for a while. But he just stood up and went, hands up. Yeah, I stuffed that. Really, really sorry. Thanks for bailing me out of it. Head down, go and get a podium.
I hate to interrupt the flow there, but great comment here in the chat room.
Sure.
What if we'd had the pedal cam for Leclerc's issue? That would have been thing of the year.
Well, because he did say, oh, if you could see what I'm having to do here to overcome it. Because I think the Ferrari engineers were initially going, oh, maybe he's like resting his foot wrong, like on the pedal, like a noob. So I'm betting with the pedal settings, you can have a certain amount of pressure on there before it registers any throttle application, and drivers maybe get used to that. So they were
like
saying, actually,
dead zone.
Yeah, like a dead zone. So they were going, take it all the way off. So if you do got the pedal cam, you might have seen like a comical really lifting off of the pedals. Anyway, so that's the positive. No, go on, Christian.
I think we're going to see a lot more of this in the future. Just now we have at least three helmet cams during the race. Yeah. So we're going to see a lot more of this just built into the cars in the future.
Put the helmet cam, please, in the middle of the helmet. So I at least feel like I've got a driver's view. It feels a bit disjointed off to the side. And if we do the pedal cam, I want to see it from the front. Is much more useful, I think, than the back.
The problem with the visor cam, though, is it has to be in the side. You know, the little cushioning on the side?
No.
There isn't any of that on the top, if I remember.
Also, you can see out from the top. It has to be in the side, because there has to be enough of the cushion to make room for the camera and the wiring and stuff like that. So it has to be there.
I want what I want. I want specially made helmets. Change the helmets then.
Just give it another 10 years of camera technology.
Fine. And let's go to the bad thing where we get to be all judgy. Okay. This is the most fun one anyway. What is your...
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Award. All right, let's look. You've made a lot, Christian, of how you're just some old guy in the faraway backwaters of Denmark.
I didn't say old. I just mentioned my age.
Yes,
and
which
what
is
are you on about
which
here?
Age is just a number, but your number is very, very high, as is Matt's. Okay, what's your Miss the Apex award, your bad thing award?
We talked a bit about the race direction, and I think something is coming along in a very short time. So after the race, all three leaders from the podium got their physios summoned and themselves summoned to the race direction. I think Hamilton got a fine for €10,000 suspended, for bringing his physio to the, and that is apparently it's something the FIA had discussions about them not going up there, and then about the weight, and did they drink something before they got weight and stuff like that. Anyway, there's something brewing in the race control drivers thing, and that is just the last place you need a fight. That is where you need calmness. That is where you need grown-ups. That is where you need clear defining rules.
Yeah, so on that, it was all the top three who had their physios interact with them in some way that raised eyebrows, because apparently they've been told, you got to stop doing that, and then they did it. So they were all given a suspended.
One of our slackers, one of our patrons, suggested that this was basically a bit of a muscle flex from the race directors. Maybe
exactly.
Some people saying it was deflection. Some people saying it's a way of laying down authority, which I don't overly object to. They made a rule. It was not listened to. They issued a suspended fine. I don't think this is overly controversial.
But the way Formula One has worked up until now, I talked about Bernie earlier. In Bernie's days, Bernie did all the passes. That was not like a group of people hired to do the passes. He knew who got the passes, micromanaging. Nowadays, we have a completely new structure of Formula One. But within the paddock, they still have this friendship kind of thing going on where we can do this and this, and then you get a fine and stuff like that. But there's still like a friendship kind of vibe. Mm. This is changing into more forcible rules, clear defining rules, which is cool, which is fine, but it's something that takes time, and you can't just put the hammer down on things like that. Same with the jury.
As Monica Geller said, rules help control the fun. Okay, Chris, who missed the apex for you?
My missed apex award also concerns the top three, and it's, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus here, and I'm only pointing this out because it was quite funny and we can look back and laugh at it, but the graphic for the podium was wildly...
You just stole mine, you absolute
turnip.
Wildly incorrect.
Yeah, they had Perez winning as a Ferrari driver.
Yes, what year is this?
Yep, that was pretty bad. So Matt has to quickly, on the spot, come up with a new Missed Apex award.
Uh-huh.
And since you have fantastic thinking on your feet and improv skills, Matt Trumpets, what was your Missed Apex award?
You're not going to like this if you're a Pierre Gasly fan, but I kind of think his weekend was wretched.
Yep. Okay, how so?
And that's that... Well, I mean, just driving into things constantly. They didn't have a great qualifying. And I mean, it looks like in certain situations, kind of like Grosjean, really. Like, I'm a bit suspect of his situational awareness. And so this weekend really seemed to bring that out in him.
It's really worrying for AlphaTauri because their pace at the moment is more reminiscent of the early Toro Rosso years where they were finishing basically last or next to last in the Constructors' Championship.
Excellent. And that just leaves me to give my Missed Apex Award. I'll try not to end on too much of a bummer, but the Missed Apex Award has to go to the crowd. We were hearing some shocking things. From what we saw, it did look incredibly rowdy, all for people having fun, enjoying themselves. But I think what we saw and what we heard about is bordering on hooliganism. And I hope we get a grip on that, because what we want to see is people going to Grand Prix, being able to be passionate, being able to yell and to be able to cheer, but everyone sitting together. We never, ever want to get away from this great thing that Formula One has always had, that rugby, even though rugby is a terrible sport, they've always had this feature, which is that fans from opposing sides can all sit together, and cricket as well. You can happily sit in the wrong place and it won't matter. That didn't look like it was the case in Formula One. And I want to keep that. I want to be positive and keep that aspect, Chris.
Yeah, I'll happily say that it wasn't bordering on hooliganism. It was hooliganism at certain points. And I don't think it just comes down to the team you support. Formula One is great for having, Williams fans next to McLaren fans and Mercedes fans and Lewis Hamilton fans and Ferrari fans and all this. They can all sit there and they can all mingle and have a good time and talk about, and respect each other for their views, which is rapidly falling away. And it's not just coming down to who they support. It's coming down to gender, race, sexual orientation. That has no place in our sport.
When you hear boos like this and you hear see people act like that, we've seen it in football a lot, very extreme things in football not many years ago. It comes from somewhere. And there's a reason why people do this. Of course, this is not normal people, and it's a small percentage of people going to the races. But when you see this kind of behavior, it comes from someone enabling it. We should all look out for people not enabling this. This should be condoned always. And I think some people last year should have thought a little bit about how they came about their wording of stuff.
Yeah, okay, and I know what you're talking about there with the teams, but we can't control what the teams do and say, but we can control how nice we are and how argumentative we are. And yeah, we're not perfect either, but I think we would start from a place of trying to be nice, of trying to be positive, try and take that into social media. Tell me if we fail. In fact, no, tell me when we fail. But let's start with making social media a nice place to be and do what we do at the racetracks. You know, I said there's nothing wrong with the booing. It's pantomime booing. I didn't feel like at Silverstone it had crossed the line. But maybe those people who aren't hooligans want to set a nicer example. Maybe I'm changing my mind on that. Maybe we need to see that booing as part of a build-up to something less harmless and a bit more sinister, and we'll try and be a bit nicer. You're too old to change, Matt. Don't worry. I'm not suggesting you change.
Oh, that's fine. I thought you were going to tell everyone to tell me if we were getting it wrong, because that's what you like to do.
Yeah, tell Matt at MissedApex.net and feedback at MissedApex.net is your most likely chance to get a reply. On that, we've really enjoyed doing the mailbag episodes after races. We'll probably do one again before the French Grand Prix. This Tuesday is going to be a patron-only pod, a doom scroll, where we do talk about some non-F1 stuff as well. It's a lot of fun. I think the bottom line is, sorry to end on a bit of a bummer there, but the bottom line is we have enjoyed two fantastic Grand Prix in a row. I think Ricard is going to be the least Paul Ricard race we've seen for a long time. I'm just so confident that these cars and these regulations can race well and entertain us on any proper F1 circuit, and it's all proper F1 circuits except for Singapore all the way to the end of the season. I think we're in for an absolutely fantastic time. Follow me at Spanners Ready on social media, at Chris on Racing. Stalk Christian Pedersen outside his house near Copenhagen, and follow Matt at MattPT55 on Twitter, and follow him on Facebook below. All the links I talk about are always in the show notes below. Consider being a patron, consider supporting us, but do tell your friends to check out Missed Apex Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.